Thank you, everybody, for coming. Once again, thank you, Rabbi Hartstock, for giving up of his time. It's Principals Weeks, so this week is Rabbi Hartstock. Happens to be next week is Mrs. Kahan from Mayanot, and the week after, I believe, is Rabbi Eli Rubin, who's all are connected to Renat, which is the best part about it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming, everybody. So I'd like to, this week's Parsha, of course, Parshat Mishpatim, there's a lot to talk about in the Parsha. I want to focus just on three psukim in this week's Parsha, starting with what's at the top in Kesef Talve Etami. This is one way to start this off, though it doesn't have to be. In Kesef Talve Etami is a kriya that stands on its own. We read this once during the year, and that is a kriya of one of the days of Chol Moed Pesach. And in its own way, if somebody would ask, like, why is it that we read in Kesef Talveh Dami as one of the kriyot of Chol Moed, there's a more obvious answer, which is that as you go through the kriya, you see that as Parshat Mishpatim goes along, maybe I should say Parshat Mishpatim on its own is kind of an entity of its own. It's called the Sefer HaBrit. The Chumash calls it the Sefer HaBrit, which basically means that when Moshe went up to Har Sinai, first he had the Ten Commandments. Moshe, first of all, gave to Bnei Yisrael, through which they established a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Sefer HaBris. And the Sefer HaBris includes Parshat Mishpatim and then into Parshat Ki Tisa. Chum and Tetzaveh are out of it. So the Sefer HaBris actually describes lots of ethical mitzvot. That's what you find Parshat Mishpatim, a lot of Beinon L'Chaveru stuff. And then towards the end, it talks about the Shalosh Regalim and Shemitah and things like that. So ostensibly, the reason why we read Kesef Talveh Etami on Pesach is because it mentions the Regalim, so it says something about Pesach. But we actually go kind of far back and start from Kesef Talveh Etami, and I think that there's a reason, like understanding what the idea of a halva'a is, the idea of a loan is, in the Torah makes it kind of relevant to the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Pesach, and kind of in its own broad way, maybe I would kind of set it up, well, this is an answer to that question. Like, in what way does a loan become like very fundamental to what it means to be a Jewish person, so that it becomes part of the Sefer HaBrit and essential to one of the things that we read about on the holidays. So what I'd like to start is by doing, I mostly like to focus on kind of the psukim and just what they say on their own. And in the Torah you find that there are three odd laws regarding loans that run counterintuitive to anything that we would imagine when we think about loans. I think it's probably fair to say that in a certain respect, in a capitalist environment, loans make society run a certain place. It's like that's what allows people to invest and it kind of keeps the cycle of wealth going is a loan. And the Torah, the loan, is going to become something different. So actually, I don't want to start, in terms of the text inside, with the Pesukim in Parshat Mishpatim. I want to start with the Pesukim in Parshat Ki Tetze, and we'll go backwards. Advarim Perek Kaf Dalet. And again, the idea here is to isolate, first off, three rules about halva'ot that are explicit in the Torah that are strange, and identify what it is that halva'ot are about. So the Pesuk says, Ki tasheh b'reyacha mashat me'uma. So this is basically describing a circumstance where somebody is a credit. Reuven owes Shimon money. So if Reuven is going to borrow $5,000 from Shimon, and Shimon wants to know that he's going to get his money back, so the common way in which you're going to ensure that you get your money back is, in the Gemara language, we call that a mashkon. So the mashkon is going to be collateral, so presumably the collateral is going to be something that's worth the $5,000, that if I'm going to lend you $5,000, you're going to give me something that's going to ensure that I get my money back at the end. Our logic dictates, right, is that if that's the case, so who picks the mashkon? Like, how do you determine what the object is for a mashkon? There's a halva, I'm saying I'm willing to lend you the money, I just want a collateral in place, so who should pick the mashkon? So the logic dictates that the... Is that a dumb question?
What? No, because I said two of them should agree on whatever it is, not one of them should pick up, but you're going to say that the borrower should...
The logic would dictate that I basically have the power because I have the money. If I have the money, I do have the power. So it could be that we both agree, but whatever it is. It is kind of very striking when the Torah says, Apip Shad, it basically says, Lo tavo el beito la'avot avoto. So one of the things you're not allowed to do is go into the person's house in order to decide or determine what it is that you want. The Pasuk Yudal says, "Bachutz ta'amod." You have to stand outside. Va'ish asher ta noshebo yotzi elecha ta'avot ta'chutza. And the person who is who owes you the money is going to bring out to you the mashko. So I just want to be like pashut, kind of, in terms of like what's the Torah actually trying to say. I know we're not learning, if we're learning like sugyas and bo mitzi, whatever, we get into a whole, you know, it's a very different kind of enterprise. What is it? Yes.
No, it's not, I don't think from there, it's to me, at a simple level, about is choosing it. It sounds like ha'avot is a definitive article, is agreement on what the avot is, expression of kavanah brios, of do you go into, do you invade the space to take it, or does it get out to you? That's how I read simplistically.
How do you know what the object is? Why do you have to stand out? You're not allowed to walk into somebody's house. You understand the
right? I'm simple reading of this without English here. You know, that, you know, it's you'll see a left at a vote. So he'll bring out the thing. This question of do you go in to take it, or does he bring it out to you?
It's interesting that the Torah would actually kind of slow down to emphasize that kind of. I mean, it's an interesting, yeah. I mean, you can imagine lots of other. That's the sort of you imagine.
Right.
I think I'll be shot what the pasuk is saying. This is, I think, how it's interpreted. Is that the idea is that a loan, meaning at least scholarly wise, is the idea of a loan, the way the loan works when you pick a mashkon. So, if you'll grant me this for a second, and then we'll see kind of how it first, the. What's the problem with having the? Why should the person who's lending the money have the right to be able to make that determination? I'm the person with the power, I'm the person with the money, so obviously it's only going to happen when I agree to the terms, and I'm going to put it out. The argument, I would suggest, is that the idea of bachutz ta'amod is to put the person who has the money at the disadvantage, even though logic is to allow the person with the money to be the person with the advantage. And one of the ways of doing that is that you have... I can give you, if I'm supposed to give you $1,000 mashkon, so I can have different things in my house that are worth $1,000, some that I am more willing to part with and some that I am less willing to part with. And so the idea here is to say that you have to be willing to put yourself at a disadvantage in order to be able to make this work. That's halacha number one that comes from Shad of the Pasuk. Halacha number two is ve'ish anihu lo tishkav ba'avoto. If he's a poor person, lo tishkav ba'avoto, you're not allowed to sleep, right, rest. You're not allowed to keep it overnight. Hashev tashiv lo et avot kivo ha-shemesh. And I'm kind of granting each of these psukim require a lot more than what we're doing, and we're being kind of surface about it. But the pasuk says that if you just, you know, what's rule, how do you put rule number two together? You know, what's it saying? Mishanihu lo tishkav ba'avoto hashev tashiv lo et avot kivo ha-shemesh v'shachav b'samato uverecheka. What's the obligation?
It's your obligation to give it back. When there's, he's poor, he may need it. You know, you have to give it back. You're the same person who you thought.
And as the Torah's emphasis is not on the fact that the borrower is responsible to pay the money back in order to be able to get his mashkon back. The Torah's emphasis is on the lender's responsibility to give the mashkon back to the borrower, and the borrower, when is he supposed to give the mashkon back? When the borrower needs it, right? Now, the reason why I feel if you put the last pasuk and this pasuk together, they actually go together to define a certain kind of concept, which I think becomes stronger when we get to the next point, which is, I think the basic idea here is that when you think about loans, the idea of a loan is that they're the wealthy and the poor, and the person with the money is the one who's got the power, and the person who is the poor person is dependent on the person who is wealthy and who has the money. And actually, logic dictates that that's a fair thing to do, that the person should be able to dictate the terms. If I'm going to part with my money and I want to make sure that I get it back, so number one is I should be able to choose it, and number two is I should be able to hold on to it, and if you need it, I say, well, then you should give me my money back, and then I'm going to give you your mashkon back at that point. And so the Torah is actually saying two super counterintuitive things in the pasuk. One is, and both of them point to the same thing, which is, if you have the money, you have to be willing to give up of the power that the money kind of provides you, almost like you're willing to lose it if you have to. How do you know that the Torah thinks that that's true, that you have to be willing to lose it if you have to? Because the pasuk says it at the end of the pasuk. What's the conclusion of that pasuk?
L'cha tiyetz
daka l'fnei Hashem elokecha. So this is actually the parsha of a loan, and the parsha of the loan says, and I actually wanted to just kind of keep it on one sheet, so I didn't give you like lots of sources. But the parsha actually right before, the unit right before this in Parsha Kitetze is actually about a poor person and an obligation to give tzedakah. Right, right, you're supposed to open your hands and to provide for a poor person. The juxtaposition of the parsha of giving tzedakah with the idea of the loan is actually suggesting that a loan and tzedakah are of a piece in the Torah's conception of it, that they actually are two forms of the same thing. Tzedakah is when you actually give money to a poor person, and lending money is actually when you help somebody out by giving them money. If you are, the Rambam on the other side is going to talk about what the word tzedakah means, but actually, I should have asked what at the end of a parsha that says that if you lend somebody, here are the rules of the mashkon, and then at the end it says ulchat yetzakah. You know what's the idea? So the argument would be that I'm not suggesting actually, because the word tzedakah, let's hold it, because the Rambam's going to define what the word tzedakah means. You do not find in Chumash that the word tzedakah means tzedakah the way that we use it. It means something a little bit different, but obviously it means something that's connected to it. So we'll try to be a little sharper about it a little after. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, in Bamatia, I know we're not talking, we're trying not to bring in the Gemara, but the Gemara talks about it, and it's referring to the fact that you have to give it back. It's referring to the fact that it's only yours. It's yours, the mashkum, but it's really not yours.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gemara says, and you may not think it's fair, but the Gemara says, "Chatiyat staka" is the quote. In other words, staka means it's referring strictly to the fact that you're going to take a mashkum, but it's not like it's yours to keep.
So sometimes when you're learning it in Bavmitz, I mean, the reason I want to stay away from Bavmitz, because that can focus a lot on the kinyanim side of it, and I just want to like focus on the value side of it. Like, it doesn't make sense. I'm saying like it doesn't make sense that you should give a mashkon back whenever the person who borrowed the money needs it. That's like it runs counter to the idea.
Since how you open the door, but if you, the Gemara there does say if it's a mashkon that's taken after the loan is due,
I'm not.
It does not have to be returned.
I think there's value to. I am not. Here's the thing. This is we're learning Psukim and Chumash, and I admit like wholeheartedly, like somebody say like, okay, but after I'm going to do this in accordance with the Gemara, and all that, the terms change dramatically when it comes to the Gemara. So that's why, which is why when I wrote it on the top, I was like, you know, understand the biblical law. It's like, what does a halva'a look like if you just look at it straight from Chumash? And I'm not kind of denying all those other things, other than to say that I put out there like my own experience of saying like of it kind of clouding out a certain value that the basic pshat in the Chumash offers in terms of how you should understand the concept of a loan. So it's not to kind of to close out learning B'Metzia, but it is to say sometimes when you don't do that, some things jumps out at you more clearly from the Psukim. And I think it's going to end up explaining something further, as we'll see in a second. Let's go to the top. Let's go to Mishpatim. So Mishpatim says, "M'kesef talvet amiyat ani imach lo tielo kenosheh lo tesimun alab neshech." This is the third rule of halvaos in Chumash. Basically three mitzvahs. So the third one is you're not allowed to take interest. That's the third one. Of course, im kesef talvet ami. I'm contradicting myself by quoting Chazal's interpretation, right? But I should say im kesef talvet ami. What's the definition of im? In this pasuk says there three times it says im. That's a kasher, and this is kind of an obligation. I would argue that the reason why it's why is it an obligation? Why is that a key? Like what's prompting that whole thing? That it's a key. I'm saying like you don't have a choice. You have to do it. You have to. Why do you have to? So, I mean, in the context that Tanoim again are understanding this is you understand this idea of tzedakah. And that's kind of the context. It shifts the level of the obligation. And so it's not about, like, do I want to lend money or to make money? I have an obligation, actually, to help somebody out. And that's what's actually going on here. So the third halacha, again, if one is that alpi pshat, the borrower chooses the mashkon, not the lender. And alpi pshat, the lender has to return the mashkon when the borrower needs it. And the third rule is that you're not allowed to lend with interest. So all of those combine into a concept of a loan that says a loan is actually about something different than what we commonly assume a loan to be about. She'll get to it in one more second. Let's read the last two psukim from Mishpatim. So it says, "Mchavol tachbol salmat reyecha, adbo Hashem shteshivanu lo." That's the same idea. You have to give it back. Kihi ksutol vada hisim latola rose. The shirt off his back. Bameishkav. What's he going to lie in? Vayaki, it's ake lie. If he calls out to me, v'shamati ki chanun ani. I will just say, right, that there's something resonant. Vayaki, it's ake lie, v'shamati ki chanun ani. In the Sefer HaBris, that's after we got the Torah, which is after Yetzias Mitzrayim, there's something that's very, like, calling out to God and having God respond is actually, I think, a very kind of powerful type of terminology that fits into the idea of the loan. The basic idea here is going to be that the idea of a loan is about helping people who are oppressed and disadvantaged, trying to reach out to them. If you don't realize that you, if you have, should put yourself at a disadvantage in order to help the person who doesn't have, then you're in the category of not realizing what it means to be oppressed, and that's a failure. And therefore, the Hayaki Shamat, right, Viki Tzakele Shamati, Ki Chanun Ani is kind of recreating that idea. You know, the whole idea is that you called out, I hear you. When people are calling out, you have to be able to hear the call of the people who are disadvantaged, because that's what's actually happening. Now, yes.
Yeah, I don't understand. He sim laso la'oro. This is what he wears during the day. He sim laso la'oro. So why does he... At night, I don't understand.
Well, Bo HaShemesh is actually, right, that becomes a discussion in the Rishonim on its own. What does Bo HaShemesh mean? The sun comes. Does that mean the sun rises or the sun sets at the end of the day? So that, again, becomes kind of a debate as to what kind of clothing we're actually referring to. But it depends on
so
how you interpret the term.
Set or sunrise.
Yeah, I think that the way that, or maybe kind of, again, loosely, I'd say the idea is when he needs it. So if you understand sunset, it's the pajamas. It's like sunrise, it's the clothing that he needs. That's kind of the idea. I would argue that actually this helps explain a different idea. That last law, which is the law of ribis in a very kind of fundamentally different kind of way. Because the ribis is a rule that's generated, obviously, a ton of anti-Semitism through medieval history for lots of times, because what does the pasuk say about interest? So the pasuk says in skip one source, "Anochri tashich elachicha lo tashich." Is interest is allowed to non-Jews, but interest is allowed to non-Jews, but not allowed to Jews. And what's problematic about that is clear. I would suggest that understanding the loan in this kind of way actually allows us to think about the idea in a different kind of way, which is maybe we'll take a step back and say, if you're not allowed to lend with interest, is that because it's unethical? What's your understanding of why it's a problem to lend with interest? What's wrong with it? Is it unethical to lend with interest? Like Torah says, you're not supposed to do it. Like, what's the problem with lending with interest?
Well, according to the way you've been presenting it, you have an obligation to lend money to people because they need it. So it's the other way. So you can't expect interest. The Torah is telling you that you have to do it because that's the way poor people have to live. So if that's the case, then you have to not charge them interest.
It's 100% ethical.
It's ethical. It's not helping them out. It's counter to what the goal is. If the goal is to help them out, and you charge interest, it's harder for them.
Right. Okay, so I just want to kind of set up, meaning the idea, so I think what the Torah is actually trying to communicate is actually very, if you pay attention to the words in Devarim actually become very, in Kitetz they become like very precise, actually. Like who are we talking about? Who are the characters in the Pasuk, in Perkav Gimel Pasuk Aleph? I mean, like I think even translating them is helpful. Who are you allowed to lend with interest to? A nochri, which is a foreigner, a stranger,
a member of the tribe.
And who are you allowed to lend with interest to? La'achicha, that you're allowed to lend with interest to your brother, right? You're not allowed to lend with interest to la'achicha. So why is the Torah using those terms of achicha and a nochri? And as you're allowed to lend with interest to a nochri, not allowed to lend to achicha. Lend to achicha, yeah.
I just remember my adversary that said achicha is most of the time we use the word re'enu, and most mitzvot, but with the mitzvot tzedakah, we use the word achicha, and so maybe it is like the converse of along the same lines as avodah zarah.
So the argument, because you're establishing that kind of connection between, so
it's not using the word different.
It's even stronger than that. So and the Rambam actually says that if you jump down, let's see if I if you look at the Rambam in Hilchas Matnos Anim in Perik Yud, so Rambam says Kol Merachim Merachimim Alav. If you have rachmanis for other people, and Hashem's merachim on you, shen emarav nosan lecharachim v'yichamecha v'yirbecha v'chol Yisrael v'hanilva aleihem ke'achim heim, and all Jews are considered brothers. They're considered part of the same family. Shen emar banim atem Hashem elokeichem v'imlo yirachim ha'ach al ha'ach. Like very strong. If a brother won't have compassion, family members are not going to have compassion for family members. Who's going to have that compassion? Who are Jews going to turn to in their time of need? Are they going to turn to the akum? They're going to turn to the outsider? The outsider is not going to be helpful. Their eyes are turned to their family members. Now, at the Rambam, and what I think, I mean, this might be, how should I say, I don't know if this, it can kind of be obvious on the one hand, and sometimes I find like people don't necessarily really think about it in this way. The problem, just for Yisrael, it's like super obvious, on the thing, right, that lending with interest is not immoral. In the same way that you can rent a car and get money for it, your car, then you give me money, give me the car back, you can rent your money and give money, and so you're saying it's not, you're wrong, it's not the same.
Well, an object appreciates. Money, in theory, doesn't appreciate. But in this world, we know it doesn't appreciate. Why? Because there's interest, right, that's built into all commercial transactions. So it appreciates by the rate of inflation or something. So I'm saying yes or no.
Okay.
Saying, there is a difference. There's a difference. Like, so, the car, money, you're going to give back the same money. But
fine.
The money
I will,
back,
I'll,
worth less.
That's
what I'm saying. So
for the purposes of the argument, for the purposes of this argument, which you will take or not take, what I want to argue is that the loan, the claim is that the loan in the Torah is actually has three rules to it, and those three rules are basically all pushing in the same direction, which is to define the concept of a loan not as something from which you can profit, that because you have wealth, you can give wealth to other people and then profit from that wealth. But that purpose of what it says in the Chumash is to actually reverse that idea, so that the idea of having wealth is to be seen as to have the opportunity to help other people. And what the three laws that the Torah establishes around Ahava in Chumash are all three ways in which to force your hand to be willing to lose or give up the power that comes with wealth, through recognizing that the other person is actually in need, and then interacting with that person as though that person is actually in need. And what I would suggest then, that if that's true, and then I'll, sorry, is that the issue of interest, it's not like a nuance. And it's like, yeah, it's this, it's you know, it's a problem, it's actually a very powerful idea in the opposite direction. It's kind of like, if I would ask you, can you lend with interest? You'd say, yeah, I can lend with interest. So if a family member needs $50,000 for something, you say, yeah, I'll lend it to you, but I'll charge you interest. You'd say the person is like, what kind of person is that? If you have a family member who needs money, then you're supposed to lend the person the money, and you're not supposed to charge interest. It's actually not nice to charge interest. You're not supposed to do that. In which case, what did the Torah do? Like you kind of look at the world would say, of course you shouldn't lend family members with interest. Of course you can lend everybody else with interest. So what the Torah did wasn't saying, we don't care about the non-Jew. That's not the way to think about the move. The move was not, this is the right way to behave, we don't care about non-Jews. What the Torah is actually saying is, we know that this is the way to behave, and the Torah's concept is, who's in that category? Who's achicha? Am Yisrael is achicha. It's actually broadening the idea of who you're supposed to consider a family. Meaning the family is the tribe, that means whatever it is that is your, I mean, the way that I imagine it is, we have a natural ethic. What the Torah is saying is, whatever our natural ethic is, you're supposed to expand that to include the entire Jewish people. And that's how you're supposed to see loans. Now, does the Torah expect you to look at the concept of a loan in that way, in every, like, that's how the Jew, like, meaning at some point in my life, I said, okay, if the Torah prohibits interest, then this whole capitalist idea is wrong, according to the Torah. The Torah thinks that, like, that's not a right thing. Well, no, actually, the Torah's not saying that. It's not like the prohibition on interest means like the capitalist enterprise is wrong. And it doesn't mean that there isn't a right thing. It means what the Torah said is that this natural instinct has got to be opened up so that all Jews are in that category. Yeah.
One thing we haven't discussed, though, is clear.
Yeah.
It doesn't speak about a bank.
Right.
And it's very specific for what kind of achicha we're dealing with. So a lot of the questions that you've been raising are focused on an individual who needs money, not because of take that money and invest in another.
I would say that that's one of the reasons why I think that there's a value to, in this instance, kind of understanding the flaws in it, of reading the psukim just on their own to see what the psukim are saying, while at the same time saying this doesn't deny that you learn about Metzi and you get a whole other thing. But it is true that the Parsha of Alon is written next to the Parsha of Tzedakah. They come hand in hand. It is also, and it's true, therefore, that the Parsha of Alon is written about Kiyamu Chachicha, about somebody who doesn't have. As the pasuk that we skipped, it says Kiyamu Chachicha in Parshas Bahar. But I want to emphasize, Josh, you've been crazy, sir.
Reading it only biblically, does the Torah prohibit a commercial loan?
Right. For whatever that's, if you want to say it like that, I would say the Torah is not, I mean, from between a Jew and a Jew, like that. I don't know how to think of it. Meaning, I would say that the argument would be chiyamuch achicha, so then it's not, you know, if a person's not in need,
That's relative.
Correct. So I don't.
If you're needing the money, you don't have the money. You're poor. You want to buy you're poor. You don't have it.
I don't think the idea of learning, the idea of isolating the pshat and the psukim is not in order to say, like, well, what the halacha, it's not to say like, oh, I was just reading the Pshat and the Psukim. The purpose of reading the Pshat and the Psukim is to say that sometimes when you're learning through all the details, you actually miss what the Pshat and the Psukim are actually trying to tell you as a value. And I think there's a very simple and super powerful idea, in my view, that the Torah is telling you about a loan, which is Jews have to see this as an opportunity that's like totally, you got to reverse what the culture naturally tells you when it comes to how you're supposed to interact with other Jews around this. Yeah.
And of course, you could rent someone a car, right? He needs a car. Why don't I just give him a car? I have money. Instead of giving him money, I can open up a car garage or something and lend people cars.
So I'm not going to...
Some of the restriction is the bright line is going to buy money and...
I'm only going to answer your question by reading the Rambam and saying I think that that's... Look at how the Rambam formulates this in Sefer HaMitzvos. Mitzvah. I'll just note again. I wanted to keep it to one page. Mitzvah Kuf Tzadi Hey in the Rambam is the mitzvah to give tzedakah. Mitzvah Kuf Tzadi Zayin in the Rambam is a mitzvah Kuf Tzadi Zayin. He shetzivanu lahalvos laani laharchiv lo lahakel inyano. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to lend money to people who are in need. That is a separate one of the 613 mitzvahs according to the Rambam. Umitzvah zu hi hayoter chasaka biyoter mechuyeva mikol mitzvah tzedakah. That's actually more powerful than fulfilling the mitzvah of tzedakah. Why? This is a classic, but people always don't actually say it in accordance with its source. How does the famous Rambam about tzedakah? Kids learn in elementary school all the time. Eight levels of tzedakah. What is the highest level of tzedakah?
Putting person business.
Giving somebody a job. Actually, what's the meaning? That's true, but actually, where does that come from? That the highest level is to give somebody a job. If you look at the, we'll skip and come back. Look at Hala on the Matnos Aniyim Perikid Al Chazayin. The Ram says Shmona Malos Yesh Bitzdaka Yesh Zulamal Mizu. There are eight levels. Mal Agdolosh Elamal Mimenu Zamachsik Bidei Yisrael. What is that word?
Shemach.
I think I texted it. Oh, shamach. Sorry, that's poor. Sorry, my short circuit. Zeh machzik bidei Yisrael shamach v'nosein lo matana o halva'a. In other words, what's the highest level? The highest level is, it's actually matana is an interesting thing, because you say, like, isn't that tzedaka? Apparently it isn't. Why? I don't know. I can't explain that for a second. But it's a halba. What's the highest level of tzedakah? To give a person a job. But actually, that thing about giving a person a job, where'd that come from? Where did I get that from? The answer is he got that from a pasuk in Chumash, and it's actually not about giving a person a job. What is the highest level of tzedakah? To lend somebody money. Because what's the image that this is portraying? What are you doing when you're lending somebody money? who is mach and who needs it.
Getting them on their feet.
You're getting them on their feet by giving them a loan. It's going to allow them to open up a business or something like that. If it's helpful for you to go in partnership with them, that's great. If it's helpful for you to give them a job, okay, that's great. But at its source, it's not you're supposed to give somebody a job. At its source, it's a mix of Kuf Tzadi Zayin that says the highest level of tzedakah is to lend somebody money. That's the biggest level, and that's why you have to be prepared to use it. Let's go back to the Sefer HaMitzvahs for a second. That is the higher than the level. That's on the first line. It's at the end. It's a Yoter Chazaka, Yoter Mechuyav Mikol Mitzvah Tzedaka. Kimishin Itbazeh V'Gilah Panav L'Shol Midei Anashim Ein Tzarot Inyano Sar Me'alav. Somebody who's shamed enough and they need, they're not going to be able to get themselves out of it. V'Atzivud Mitzvah Zo Amro Yitaleim Kesef Tavet Amir Te'ani Imach. And then he says, V'loshen Nechilta, and this is why I feel better quoting this particular thing. The Rambam is quoting this in Sefer Mitzvos as Pshana Pasuk. V'loshen Nechilta, Kol Im Ve'im Sheba Torah, Roshuz Chutz Mitzlosha, Echen Mehem Kesef Tal Ve'etami. Because this is talking about an obligation that you have in order to help your brothers through the Mitzvah of Halva. That's the idea that's being explained here. If you turn to the other side for a second, to get to the word staka. Because I think there's something very powerful about that word staka as it appears here. Because actually, what does it mean in the Chumash? You should give back the mashkon when the person needs it, and he will bless you. So you could say now that means, and that's like a mitzvah of staka, because it's like next to the something. Ram doesn't quite do that. But why is that? What does the word staka mean? So the Rambam, towards the end of Moreh Nevuchim, he says, this chapter treats of the meaning of three terms which you find necessary to explain, chesed, mishpat, and staka. I skipped a little, but I'll just give you the first paragraph about chesed. What does chesed mean? So the Rambam says, in our commentary on the sayings of the fathers, we have explained the expression chesed is denoting an excess in some moral quality. It is especially used of extraordinary kindness. So chesed, okay, that's some kind of vibe like that we have, of being like extraordinarily kind. What does tzedakah mean? The term tzedakah is derived from tzedek, righteousness. It denotes the act of giving everyone his due, and of showing kindness to every being according as it deserves. In Scripture, however, the expression tzedakah is not used in the first sense and does not apply to the payment of what we owe to others. When we therefore give the hired labor his wages or pay a debt, we do not perform an act of tzedakah. We do perform an act of tzedakah when we fulfill those duties towards our fellow men, which our moral conscience imposes upon us. For example, when we heal the wound of the sufferer. Thus, Scripture says, in reference to the returning of the pledge to the poor, and it shall be tzedakah unto thee. When we walk in the way of virtue, we act righteously towards our intellectual faculty and pay what is due unto it. And because every virtue is less tzedakah, Scripture applies the term to the virtue of faith in God. Okay, it's a lot of words. What does that mean? What does tzedakah mean? And how is it different from chesed? And how is it different from mishpat? I mean, I'm wondering actually if you have a vibe from the comparison. Chesed is extra loving, extraordinary kindness.
I don't know, but somehow it sounds here like a chati and stuff like that. It's something you're doing yourself a favor, as opposed to the chesed and mishpat that you're doing for other people.
Well, what are you doing? Like, what is it about you that's stuck? The key word here is the Rambam.
What's
the
key word? With some bite, like,
when you're acting according with mishpat, what are you doing?
You're being nice to other people.
No. Chesed, tzedakah, mishpat. Chesed is excessive kindness. What's mishpat?
We didn't do it,
but you can guess, right? What is it? It's the law. So what's tzedakah? Tzedakah is apparently something that is, it's not chesed, but it's not mishpat.
It's doing what's right.
It's doing what's right, even though it's not exactly mishpat. What would be an example of doing something that's called tzedakah, even though it's not mishpat? So he's saying a loan is an example of tzedakah that's not mishpat. Why? You're lending the person. I'm filling it in. Right? He quotes that. What does it mean? L'chatiyah tzedakah? He's saying, like, what do you have? What would mishpat dictate? If I have a mashkon, I'm not giving you the mashkon back. Give me the money back, and I'll give you the mashkon back. That's what it would dictate. This is called tzedakah. Because tzedakah is doing what's morally right, even though mishpat wouldn't necessarily demand something like that. So you say, well, isn't that chesed? Like, what's exactly the difference in those two things? So here I just want to point out a lot of Bible scholars, I think that this is, go back to the first side for 1 second. All I wanted to do with that was say, the Rambam notes, right, we're familiar with these three terms, chesed, tzedakah, and mishpat, and we kind of assume that they're related to each other, so whatever, chesed's really nice, tzedakah's also nice, and mishpat's like the law. And I was saying, like, wait, what exactly does it mean? The Chumash uses words, you gotta know what they mean. And the idea is, and it's used here, so the argument is that it's used here because this is something that actually falls, it's about doing what's morally right, but it's not just like going above and beyond. It's actually, this is what is morally right that everybody should do. It's like one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. So what is that category? So I would argue that the category, what the idea is, that alone, mishpat of alone is how you interact with a non-Jew. You can lend with interest, you can hold on to the, you know, hold on to the mashkin if you want. There's nothing wrong with that. That's like mishpat. What's the Jewish loan supposed to be? It's supposed to be tzedakah. What does that mean? It has its set of rules. You're not just going above. You're actually obligated to do it. But what you're obligated to do is not what the kind of legal norm would be. It's like a cultural, moral norm that Jews are supposed to have for the range of Jews who are supposed to be able to interact with each other in that kind of way, as though you're a family. That's kind of the idea. That actually lends meaning to the following phrase. When God appoints Avraham, when God speaks to Avraham and says, "This is why I chose you," Now, Bible scholars, the Gemara actually asks this in a couple of places. Gemara Sanhedrin says, "Actually, what's the problem with that phrase? What will you command? Do lasot staka mishpat." So, you know what the Gemara asks on that? Gemara Sanhedrin says, "Lasot staka mishpat." Which one? If it's tzedakah, it's not mishpat. It's mishpat, it's not tzedakah. And what does the Gemara say? What's it talking about? Pshara. That's the Gemara's answer to that question. It's pshara. So that, again, that's the Gemara's answer to that question. The Bible scholars say that if you look in Tanakh, you find very often that term, tzedakah or mishpat. Sometimes mishpat or tzedakah. When they talk about David, why was David appointed a king? Because he's going to do mishpat or tzedakah. So the Bible scholars interestingly say, I think, as follows. They call this... let's see, read Moshe Weinfeld. He says on the bottom, the concept of social justice was expressed, which is, it's a treif term these days. The concept of social justice was expressed in ancient Israel and the ancient Near East by means of a hendiades. That's a great word. I always forget the example. I always forget to come equipped with an example. A hendiades is a term that means two words that actually mean one thing. Two words that mean one thing. I hope somebody's going to be able to come up with an example of that. Like the first thing that's in my head is
two different words.
No, I was going to say like sweet and sour, but that's not really right. That's two things, sweet and sour.
I hope so.
What? Oh man.
Is it an expression of two?
No, it's an expression. Two words that
it's
mean.
An expression that comes together.
What does hot and spicy mean? Is that two words, hot and spicy? Does it mean hot and spicy? Do you know I'm trying to get it? You know I have, it's like a, I can say, wow. Yeah, can you please, thank you, I was just going to say, somebody can Google a hendiades, one of these things is going to come up. H-E-N-D-I.
Will and testament.
Will and testament, okay, that's good, thank you.
That's two languages, right? That's what it comes from.
But we use it as in that kind
same
of way.
Word.
Same, yeah.
Do they really mean exactly the same thing, or their nuances?
Yeah. Well, this is also not going to mean, that's kind of what the argument is going to be. Do you got one yet?
Yes.
Should I just keep? Okay, I'm going to say...
9-10.
Well, yeah, I'm going to take six. Okay.
Nice and warm.
Nice and warm. Yeah, that's Wikipedia's version, right? You got to trust that. Because the reason why I think that works is because when you say something is nice and warm, it doesn't mean that it's nice and it's warm. You mean it's nice and warm. That's what it means. Meaning, I think you get the flavor of what that is, right? The idea of hendiades is that sometimes you use two words together in order to express a concept. So they say the idea of mishpat tzedakah is actually a hendiades. That's the idea. What does that mean? Let's read the sentence again. The concept of social justice was expressed in ancient Israel and the ancient Near East by means of a hendiades. The most common word pair to serve this function in the Bible is mishpat u'tzedakah, or tzedakah mishpat, justice and righteousness, or righteousness and justice. how are those two things that express the same thing? And I think this is kind of the idea. The idea is that the loan in the Torah is the legal establishment of a concept that morally is morally compelling, and that the kind of the strength of the Jewish people is that God commanded us to do things that like societies wouldn't expect regular communities should do, because the law doesn't expect people to have to do that, but the Jewish people should act that kind of that way, and they should do that, because the rule that Avram had, think about it, like what was great about Avram? You'd say Avram was chosen because he did tzedakah mishpat. Wasn't he chosen because he does chesed? And the answer is yes, but we call that chesed because we don't know the terms clearly the way that the Rambam says you're supposed to understand the terms. It's not about being really nice. What Avram was going to do was create a community of people that were going to establish as an obligation. They're going to accept the autonomy as an obligation to live according to what is morally right to do in a way that pushes them even further than what the law would expect them to necessarily be able to do. And right, so that all, so again, that the idea was that the rules of Halva'ah are all set up in order to be able to put the lender at a disadvantage to subvert the basic idea of a loan, which is the powerful get more, and this is the powerful have to help other people. That is tzedakah, that's particularly an obligation that we have to each other, and therefore the interest rules are the way that they are, and therefore I'd say the reason why it's so important to read, why read it on Pesach and Kesef Talveh Dami is not only because okay, it's nice that there's the Shol Shugam toward at the end, we back it up all the way there, because that's actually part of what you see us, that's why it's in the Sefer Bris, that's why when we got this first set of rules, this is in there, because it's actually central to what we're supposed to learn about these things. And I guess I will very quickly finish with, because I feel like this is not by chance, if you turn to the other side for a second, I'm just going to note that the idea of halvaya is actually, livaya is actually a very important thing in Judy, right? The Eglah Rufa is about like cities, right? Kapar Lamcha Yisrael Sher Padisa, right? That you should forget. What do you have to have kapara for not realizing that you were taking out Mitzrayim? So Gemara said, for what? Because you were not Milave. So what's the idea of Halva? And if you look in the dictionary, the idea of Halva'a and the idea of and Livaya are the same root. They actually come from the same thing. And the Rambam talks about all the v'haftar yecha kanocha mitzvos in ilchos avel, and he says, look at halacha beis in the bottom. He says, "Schar halvaya merubah min akobu shechak hachok shechakika Avram Avinu derches shenagba." Meaning, Avram's also about that levaya and that escorting. And I'll just say, because I don't think this is by chance, that the Rambam halacha gimel, when he's talking about v'haftar yecha kanocha and levaya, says, "Kofin lilvaya kederech shekofin litzdaka." Like, what does that have to do with anything? In Hilchos Avel and Hafzerech Kamocha, what are we talking about? And the answer is, these are all the same things. Livaya, Livaya Tamet, Livaya Tachai, Halva'a, are all the basic ideas that are all what Avraham Avinu was about, and that's why it's kind of central to being a Jew, and that's how it connects all to Yitziat Mitzrayim. Thanks very much for coming. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you very much.